self-credit amendment bill. I know that that's why everyone has an interest, because everyone is a consumer. Being a consumer, one or the other, you have to credit someone. And then it is interesting that you have to be protected in the process. So maybe after a protected long time, we did see fit with the government, but where was the regulator? That the legislative effect has to be amended. So we are very happy today that the initial stage is within the committee in our convention, where the department is going to put its position and the regulator about the amendment. So we are all welcome, and the next of that thing, we are going to be very quick this morning. There are only two items in the agenda. That is the interpretation of the National Credit Amendment Bill, plus the issue of the workshop on trade. Is there anyone from the side of the committee who proposed the adoption of the agenda? Honorable Waide, supported by Honorable Fanab Nante. All right, agenda being adopted, who is the people that provide the authority to return for trade?
And receive an apology from Mr. King, who is as well.
Oh, all right, thank you. I think those apologies must be accepted because they are really serious apologies.
Prejudicial, Dr.
No, there is. Is there any apology, Mr. Lindwood, from the
president? No. I'm just wondering. I'm not sure where it is, but I forgot to mention it.
All right. We are having a delegation from the department. The delegation is led by the DTG, the Sultan, Ms. Sultan Tulis, which I'll be glad to see must introduce her and Harish herself. Because we don't know who's going to participate, I think that she's the one who must introduce her and Harish. They are all welcome, plus the CEO. They are all welcome. And then DTG, can you introduce her and Harish, please?
Good morning, Honorable Members, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the opportunity to introduce the team. We do have the team from the DCI and the team from the NPR, which is our regulator. Here we have myself, and I've got Andy Sabogana, who is the director for this area. And we've got Chifuama Mutuku, who are director for legislative drafting, and of course Mr. Clark Ogaba near the back, who are the director assisting Anita. And we've got Ms. Nomsa Mukhara, who is the CEO of the NCR, and Mr. Siva Mashaba, who is the company secretary of the NCR. So this is the team that we have today. But the presentation will be led by ourselves in Anita, and then we'll have the team assisting in responding to any of the issues that will come from there. Thank you.
Thank you, DG, for bringing the two compliments. If there's anything, we'll be able to respond to. So I don't know why the members, we have this National Credit Amendment Bill, the policy review on the act, plus the act itself, and the presentation. You have to all the documents. That's the presentation, the amendment bill, the policy review document, plus the act itself. Yeah, so then that is the department of government. All right, DTC, please come on.
Chair, can I just check something?
Yeah.
This HCA 4-B, 4-2, 4-2013, this document in respect to the project, is this the same as the, this is a different title to the one that we released several months ago that I read. Is this just a policy review?
Yeah.
This has got a different name.
All right, Mr. Gordon.
Did you see? I'm not sure what's going
Thank you, sir. We will just ensure that the Parliamentary Office checks that, because the document will put it from the site, but we do acknowledge that the first page is actually incorrect. We will ensure that the proper document is a consistent translation. Chair, I've introduced the team already, but just to go through what our presentation is going to cover today, we will just do some introductions, just looking at the quick regulation of South Africa, and look at the role of and responsibilities of DPI, and then we'll then look at into the Credit Act itself, by way of background, and we'll then look at the review process in relation to the Act, as well as the public consultation processes, and we'll then go into the issues that have come up that we're seeking to address through the proposals that we are putting to this Parliament. And we'll also indicate some of the issues that have come up during the consultation period that were not necessarily part of the policy proposals from the department. And also we'll then talk to the issues relating to consultation with the National Treasury on the credit policy as well as the bill itself. And then we'll look at some of the key areas that we are proposing the credit amendment bill, and just touch on, you know, the status today. And so we're hoping that by the end of the presentation, you'll be able to see what exactly are the things that you want to fix, and why you also want those things to be fixed, and also to indicate the levels to which the stakeholders have supported the proposal, and where there have been queries or challenges in regards to some of the proposals, will also add to that so that you have more information about the proposals in front of you. Just in terms of the credit regulation in South Africa, the regulation of credit, Cosmo Credit in particular, is one of the imperatives in the constitution of this country. Credit regulation is part of consumer protection as well. You recall that in terms of the Credit Act, we established the Consumer Tribunal, and the Consumer Tribunal also hears letters arising from the Consumer Protection Act. So there is a direct linkage in terms of the activities of the NCR and the activities of the NCC. So it is possible that, in fact, one particular matter that is filed as a complaint with the NCR could actually have matters that relate directly to the issues that are in mandate of the NCC. So I think in terms of also just the implementation of the two legislation, it is very important for the two regulators to work much more closely together, because they might have to also, you know, use joint processes to achieve some synergies, and also maybe be cost effective around the investigation where it might translate to both the mandate of the institution. In the DPI, we do have a mandate for consumer protection. In particular, in relation to credit, the DPI is responsible for credit regulation. And because of the fact that we regulate credit, and most of the providers of credit happen to be financial institutions, we do have an ongoing relationship with the National Treasury to discuss some of the measures that arise from time to time. And to that end, we've also agreed to have monthly meetings with Treasury just to discuss issues that might come about from a policy perspective and also from the implementation perspective. But also going forward, the regulators themselves are entering into some agreement to ensure that there is a protocol around their communication on matters that relate to the industry in this regard. The role of the DPI chair, as we've indicated, specifically is to ensure, in relation to regulation, that a fair regulatory environment is created to enable investment, trade, enterprise development, and also to ensure equitable and socially responsible behavior from the industry players. In this regard, chair, our division is responsible for developing and implementing regulatory solutions. And I must say also that often we will come and bring proposals around the law, but our mandate is bigger than just bringing regulations. Our mandate is also to look at the market and how it operates. And as we look at the market, identify some of those things that are in regulation that hinder business activity or efficiency in how the market operates, and make proposals for removal of them so that we can reduce the burden of doing business to our entities in the country. So you see that when we introduced the proposals around the Companies Act, it was directed to ensure that we remove some of the red tape provisions that existed previously to also streamline the processes. So it is part of our mandate that we don't only introduce regulations, but we also ensure that regulation that hinders the ease of doing business in the country is elsewhere. So that's just the quote that we put there to just allude to the fact that the current regulation in South Africa is a role model for a whole lot of countries. You'll recall that after the financial crisis, South Africa was looked upon as an example, because had it not been of the introduction of the NCA, what we did in 2007, we would have been worse off in terms of the impact that the country would have had because of the financial crisis. So these things are noted by a number of independent analysts, a number of independent commentators, but we can say to ourselves that this is one of the pieces of legislation that we are proud of, that we are seeing the results, but it is not without its challenges. The implementation has shown to us that there are a number of gaps, there are a number of loopholes, that if we can just fix them and close those gaps, we'll be able to achieve, I think, even much more better in terms of this action. So just in terms of the National Credit Act itself, it's Act No. 34 of 2005, and it came into effect in 2007, and it was developed from a policy framework for consumer credit, which the BPI finalized in 2003, and it replaced the Credit Agreements Act as well as the usual act. The NCA introduced a new era in preventing and curbing reckless credit practices, but it also introduced a new dispensation around debt cancelling. This was something that was in existence. So basically it did create a new provision in this space. And you'll see that as we take you through some of the provisions in the proposed amendment, we're also seeking to tighten some of those areas to make sure that we still achieve what we intended to achieve through this dispensation. There is also, undoubtedly, a sense that this is one of the best pieces of legislation, not only in the country, but I think worldwide. And I've already indicated that we've got independent commentators that can allude to that, can testify to that. In fact, our regulator, the NCR, has been used and invited to come and advise in various countries, in various institutions, in terms of how how other countries can actually take the same approach. And we think that we'll continue to do that, especially in the region as well, to ensure that we can find some coherence and coordination in regards to credit regulation. So I'm going to allow Andy to take you through the policy issues and the legislative issues that come from this particular process that we've run. But just to take you through to where we started and to where we are, the review process on our side was an ongoing process. When the Act was being implemented, we had the constant impact assessment that was being conducted. And we developed baseline studies so that we can be able to measure the impact as we go along. And the University of Pretoria was contracted to do that, to work with our regulators and some of the important stakeholders in the credit market to ensure that we, on an ongoing basis, identify the issues that can indicate to us what is the impact. And that process is being assessed to pick up some of the challenges on an ongoing basis. So by the time we actually got into the actual documentation of the review in 2012, we already had this study that has been done on an ongoing basis. The main objective really of our review was to identify whether there are necessary legislative amendments that should be introduced, and also whether there's any policy basis for those amendments. We also looked at development of policy in the areas that may have been proposed but that do not have a policy basis. So we looked at the development of the policy positions on that, but also to look at whether the policy that was adopted by this country to go to the credit market is still relevant. And I am proud, Chair, to say that we do think that the policy is still relevant, and we think that it's a policy that will still take this country far, and there is no need to overhaul it or to fiddle with it. So to the extent that there may be areas that we need to just tighten up, this is what we're doing. So the policy is still relevant, and we are proud that actually we didn't make any mistakes in this approach. Chair, as I've indicated, we did approach the business enterprise at the University of Pretoria to do an analysis, and they have given us a report which then highlighted some of the areas that might need to be looked at. And I must say, Chair, that the one thing that we are also proud of in this process is the extensive consultation that the service providers that we appointed have gone through. They have consulted with the relevant stakeholders, they consulted with the consumer groups, they consulted with the consumers themselves and directly through surveys and so on and so forth. So they've always been in a position to ensure that our consultation process is good. So we then finalized the document and the proposed document in terms of the policy framework as well as the bill were then presented to cabinet for approval so that we can go for public consultation. And that was done in April. And those were issued, notices were issued. We then conducted stakeholder workshops in various locations and provinces. And those took place around June. And we were able to cover a significant part of the country. We also allowed for an extension in terms of a comment period because a number of stakeholders wished to submit additional comments, so we did also allow an additional time. And we received written comments from the stakeholders, about 45 of them. And the documents were then revised based on the inputs that were received from the stakeholders. Some of the issues that we were not able to close on during the initial review of the policy and the draft bill itself, we were able to close on them after the consultation process because we received very useful input from the industry, from the consumer groups, as well as from individuals that are having an interest in the space. So we then presented the policy and the bill to cabinet for approval and also to introduce the bill into parliament. That was done in July. And this was, however, delayed slightly because of Treasury requesting a bilateral to discuss some of the things that they thought may concern to them. And we allowed for that process to discuss those issues. And I think as Alistair takes you through the presentation, he would have alluded to some of the issues that they raised, which we then reached agreement on. And these are the issues that we thought were important. And therefore, that delay was important, and it was a good thing that we agreed to it. So, Chair, the documents were now resubmitted to cabinet, and they were approved on the board of the chamber. And it is for that reason that we are here now today, to just do this briefing on the issues that we will be proposing to this committee. Chair, I also want to emphasize again saying that in our review, we thought that this is one of the perfect pieces of legislation. So the policy is sound, the law is sound, but we just need to enhance a few areas. And this is also supported by a number of other independent analysts who have looked at the CRIP case and looked at the CRIP regulation, as indicated here in the study that was conducted by Deloitte, where they specifically do indicate that the framework is solid in this sense, but that they need to be carried more powers to issue guidelines so that we can guide the industry properly as well as ensure that there is compliance with the relevant pieces of regulations that we are issuing under either the CPA as well as the consumer the credit act. So Chair, we are not here to overhaul the act like we did when we came for companies. We do think that in this case all we want to do is just to propose that let's improve some of the areas that through implementation are presented to us, some of the issues that as they go along in terms of implementing the act, they pick up, and not some of the issues that we also want to deal with and correct in the legislation, but also the practical challenges that exist in terms of debt cancelling, in terms of debt arrangement processes and so forth and so on. So those are things that we just wish to correct. I'm going to hand over to Anisa to take you through some of those issues in brief so that we can then also allow, I think, more time for the committee to engage at this time.
Thank
you know.
haven't feel I haven't feel the same to cross. But of course there will be some accounts associations that we have to dealt with some examples. But we are saying that the national consumption is not should actually be doing more than what it is currently doing. It's in respect of certain cases. The introduction of the Act brought in new players. A lot of those players are best countries, but we have found that there are, you know, mistakes within the practice of their countries. And through this policy and the legislation, we are saying now we need to tighten as to whom they practice. There needs to be qualification. There needs to be minimal standards, including education, but also to define the person of a debt counselor, who should be able to qualify as a debt counselor. And that is informed by the experiences that we've had, whereby there has been a certain public mischief that has been committed by a debt counselor. So within the case and the policy, we are describing who is a fit and proper person to become a debt counselor, to become a debt counselor. Interesting, whether we did also deal with the issue whether, in fact, companies should actually be allowed to practice and practice a debt counselor, or whether that should be left to individuals who can care directly accountable or personally liable for any mistakes that happen within that space. Honorable members, we also deal with the policy with the issue of accountability assessment, because we feel that in as much as the Act has made further inroads into the issue of correctness lending, but because there was some technical weakness in the way we have prescribed the guidelines for accountability assessment, and actually left it to the credit providers, we are now proposing another amendment in the policy that we need to tighten the area of accountability assessment to make both the consumer and the credit provider to declare honestly and truthfully when they complete affordability assessment. Because as you know, these days, when people, you know, companies, everybody left with a disposable income, say, of 500 charge, and one, you know, how is that possible? Only to find that the clerk or the office had a credit provider, several forms of form to make it possible for the consumer to get a loan, even if the consumer does not qualify for that particular loan, which will therefore lead to repossession, to issues of accessing. So we are checking those areas. Also on that, in relation to another project, which we spread out and so we follow this point, the issue of accountability assessment measures. Remember, I was talking about the empowerment consumer. It should be able to deal with matters of recognition in current business. And because we believe that it's cost effective for consumers. We know how many few cases of recognition have actually been brought before court. Because, of course, one of the reasons of the extension for it must have had to be referred to our normal courts. The issue of the registration of registrants within the credit act had not been dealt fully in the current act. And by intention that was to allow, for example, when we talk about enhancing the powers, not of the charging amount of the personal credit regulator, we are contemplating in the proposal in the bill that the national credit regulator should be able to impose provisions that will determine who can register as a debt counselor. And but also because of the experiences that we had, that say for example when debt counselors want to withdraw or cancel for good reasons at times, there are no provisions there. We are merely providing a process by which a debt counselor can withdraw from the process, can withdraw from the debt guidelines of the process. But that will lead to the strict regulation because again, we don't want debt counselors to withdraw willingly for freedom to the resource. But where a case can be made that or which is actually to the benefit of the consumer for debt counselor to withdraw, the debt counselor should be able to do so. And this is one of the provisions we are putting in the amendment. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, the issue of alternative dispute resolution structures is already provided for in Section 134 of the current Act, but we needed to tighten that area and actually define who can actually perform this work with our regulator, the national credit regulator, we propose an amendment here to make that illegal. Because we need to have tight controls. In terms of the Act, the national credit regulator has got monitoring and vast responsibility and cannot perform such functions if some of the payers are not regulated under the Credit Act and under the National Credit Act. National Credit Regulator. The issue of debt counselors, honorable members, has become also an issue of that needed our attention as a regulatory area, and we need training for staff of debt counselors. And that anyone who is not registered as a debt counselor should just stop and collecting the information and doing other administrative work, but not under the terrain of having to actually counsel consumers or do the debt counseling work, which is properly defined in there. That's what debt counseling is. The people must be fit and proper persons. And then we also provide the environment of contribution of registration of debt counselors. Those are the main issues, honorable members, that we are bringing into the Act to enhance the implementation of the Act, to improve where there have been challenges, and just generally to improve the structure of the drafting of the Act. But as the DG has indicated, we conducted a extensive on this project, and something we listened to some of the issues that the stakeholders raised. There is, honorable members, the issue of the high cost of credit life insurance, which we have the GTI needs to look to in the future. Because, you know, when we look at this, there are issues of high insurance, but one of the profiteering happens through credit life insurance, only to find that consumers are not even aware what they are paid for. It could be covered to some reason because they don't know if it actually also covers debt for retrenchment and so on. And the so-called claims or the loss ratio really indicates that, you know, millions of children of men are being killed through this credit life insurance. Well, the good one company for the same amount pay $500, or in another company you pay $100. So, you know, that informs the difference. When somebody is a really profiteering, but there is an actual reasonable cost for credit life insurance. Some of the issues that have been raised are conditions of conscience, government and Danish orders, but it's also part of the deal of regulating another magistrate's court act, which is administered by the Department of Justice, and we are engaging with that department. And I think the general consensus on issues that needs to be improved in respect of the magistrate's court act. And we're working towards incorporating them in their processes, which are already started actually, in terms of amending their act to prohibit those instances where people are made to sign insurance before the act actually becomes due and fair. And the issues of consent to judgment, and we're also dealing with other issues of assistance to judgment. Very easy for consumers to be able to get assistance of judgment. Some of the issues are the issues of spouses' concerns, which we managed to resolve because the Matrimonial Property Act actually deals with such concerns quite effectively. The issues of the in-dubnam rule, whereby you find that a person holds more than double one from where he started with the Act. And those are some of the issues that have been raised. And those are some of the issues that in the future will be recognized. But we have provided responses as to why the Act currently wouldn't really want to change some of these aspects and why it was affected in the month that it was done, because it was simply to protect consumers. There are other issues that have been identified, not so very important issues, prohibition of touting by debt counselors, some areas would like to, but this came late rather in the process. Whereby you, some person should be posted by the instead can get you off that kind of culture, and which is unsure and suited for consumers because there are processes to get the consumer of the black book. initial deployment of bad times, but now it's able to pay and actually can afford a new credit. And because the head says, okay, the lender is going to stay with the, you know, the bad network for all the credit for 5 years, you cannot go back and get credit. And the president has actually paid off all the small debts and everything else, but the informal example, that's the year mortgage for funds. Which prohibition the country now has been on a foreign desert arrangement as well to stay there for 20 years until the house is paid. Under the new policy, under the proposal of the amendment policy and the air drafting, that shouldn't be the case. If the country can show that it's paid off all its other debts and the only outstanding debt is the long-term mortgage one, that person should be in fact the facilitator to get more credit. If he can show, or she can show that, she can afford new debt. And those are some of the stakeholder comments that we have related to incorporate into the Act. Some of the things when the Act, before the amendment of the Act, were the issue of many codes that the regulator has sought to plug in certain gaps and has come up with. And we are saying there are some of these that the minister said need to be converted into law, so that you don't fall off all the time by conduct, because for enforcement purposes that could be problematic. We also deal with the government structure of the regulator, which is the National Credit Regulator. And we also deal with correcting some of the provisions of the Consumer Protection Act relating to the finding of complaint, because it was an error there in terms of Section 29 and Section 59. As to when a consumer can actually refer a complaint to commission. The issue that never came up is the issues that were raised by the Honorable Hamasini in the private members bill, were much raised as all even when we as the CI tried to bring them up to say what are your views on this issue of interaction. That's one of the issues that the Honorable Hamasini had actually brought up was the issue of stopping the accumulation of interest. And the comment that was from stakeholders when we raised the issue is that, you know, the Act already has provisions, numerous provisions, on how to deal with the debt of debt of the arrangement. And it would interest the economy or the credit providers to, or even the consumer as well, to suspend the accumulation of interest for certain, you know, when in fact perhaps the consumer would still have to pay the same interest after that period of time. It just prolongs the period of debt. So this issue that was promised to this committee that those some of the issues would like to show to stakeholders, they never really came out. We have written comments on that, and none of the stakeholder associations has actually raised the issues that the Honourable Minister has. That's why we should inform this committee on that particular issue. Other members of the DG have spoken about our consultation with Treasury. We have numerous meetings. Ultimately, we could find each other. One of the main issues that we needed to discuss with Treasury is the issue of coordination. Section 17, and we have, in fact, amended and incorporated that session, the amendment of Section 17, to accommodate the concerns of National Treasury. To beef up the issues of creating a protocol for proper coordination between the issue of, proper coordination between the regulators, between the departments and between the regulators. The other issue that we discussed was the issue of the credit, that we now call it credit information restorative justice. The previous called it a credit amnesty, but on recommendation of cabinet, we changed the name. And one of the concerns that we had with National Treasury Act in the amendment bill, we have come to an agreement with the indicators on all of the issues, including this one, and we are amending Section 21 and Section 23 of the National Credit Act to provide the minister with the necessary authority. Statutory authority to proceed as cabinet is approved to proceed with the amnesty, credit information amnesty. but removal of adverse credit information. I'm not sure of my solution. Thank you, Mr. Manager. Due registration of credit providers, okay, initially in trying to enhance the powers of the national credit regulator, we thought it should have the powers to deregister credit providers. But we also looked at the impact and the comments and so on, and the current policy proposal is that this power should remain with the tribunal. And it's one of the areas, one of the high contentious issues we have with the national treasury, because they fear that banks will deregister and so on, so we have to agree with them, but it should not be done as a regulator, but after following due process before the tribunal, so that both sides can be heard. And we agreed on these issues, of course, which was very fruitful with the United Department of National just going back to the bill, there are provisions which I've spoken to about the environment, CEO, and some administrative issues that you'll find earlier on in the Health and Social Protection about improving defining the employment remuneration powers of the CEO of the National Consumer. Of the National Credit Regulator. And prohibiting people who can be it's part of the qualification of being a fit and proper person to be a debt counselor. After the duty assessment, the certification, and parallelly up to the register payment distribution agent. We now have a much more clearer understanding of the nature and the degree of payment distribution agent. I must say that one of the chairman of the members, and therefore we are bringing them within the realm because they were not regulated when the Act started off. These are some new players that came out through the application of the Act, but they are available there, efficiency is clear, but we just needed to register and regulate and be able to deregister through the National Credit Regulator. The issues, Honorable Chair, on the bill refer to those in the Act and so on, not really talk to this slide. The DPG has spoken about where we are, that the amendment bill was approved by Cabinet on the 4th of September 2013. The memorandum of functions has been finalized, and the notice has been published yesterday, and we intend to introduce the bill into Parliament during this month. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. I'll hand the floor back to the Deputy Chair.
Chair, Mr. Manuela has covered the issues in the policy, and as you see, the issues that are in the bill seek to reflect the things that came out from the policy. And Chair, obviously, to the extent that we may have missed any of the issues in the policy, and they don't find themselves necessarily in the bill, in the proposed amendments, we'll obviously request the indulgence of the committee as we go through the process to point them out. But we are, at the moment, thinking that these proposals should be able to address issues that came up. And Chair, we have had a number of comments, obviously in the media, also comments sent to us. Some people do feel that more could have been done in terms of the proposals that we are bringing here, that we could have added more. People also would propose experience. But we do think that having assessed all of the inputs, I think it is our responsibility to also try and balance the interest of both the stakeholders, of all the stakeholders, that is the interest of consumers, the interest of the industry, as well as the industry or the interest of some of the interested groupings in the credit sector. So we try as much as possible to balance those. But I think people will obviously have an opportunity to address this parliament when we some of the key things that have come out of the presentation that Anissa has taken you through. The issue around the payment between agencies, has indicated that the NCA brought in a new dispensation, a new provision around debt cancelling. It also brought in, through implementation, a new little sector which we think it will grow, depending on how properly regulated this it is, the payment distribution agencies. These are people that basically, once the consumers have agreed with the credit provider in terms of repayment on their restructured debt and so forth, what they will do is that they will coordinate the payments from the consumers and then pay the various credit providers so that the consumer does not bear the cost of going and paying each one of them. So they then coordinate that and then they transmit the payments to the various credit providers. And this has proven to be, I think, very efficient, but we would like it to be monitored very, very closely by the regulator. At the moment, they have been doing it, but it's on an agreement basis. So there is no effect of law to really ensure that if at any point anything goes wrong, you're able to enforce it and correct it. So we are proud that at least that area is properly attended to, but we do need to give the legal basis to it. So the other important area that Anissa touched on was the issue of energy rehabilitation. I think if the committee can really look at that also very closely, because it's something that has come up, obviously from the consumer's themselves. If you are under debt review, you can pay up all of your debt, but you know, as part of the consolidation and all of that, you're putting your bond as well. So if your bond is not paid up, then you still don't get out of debt. So you feel under you are an over-indebted consumer. Even if you pay up, that still remains and you are not able to be rehabilitated earlier. So what the proposals that are here in front of you are, they relate to just allowing the early rehabilitation. If the only debt that is still outstanding is only the bond, but then if you look at the affordability assessment, the consumer is still able to afford credit, then you can actually rehabilitate the consumer much more earlier. So the other aspect around the removal of adverse credit information, that is the initial amnesty. In the bill, we are proposing that this removal of information should be on an ongoing basis. So when a consumer has paid up, they need to be removed from that listing. So what is being proposed really in the current amnesty provision, would like to incorporate it in the legislation such that it happens on an ongoing basis, so that there isn't a need in the future to really say, let's give amnesty. But it must be something that is done on an ongoing basis, so that the decision whether or not to extend credit must be based on whether or not the consumer can afford credit and can be able to take better credit, not for the fact that they are listed at some point. So I think that is an important element that I think would like to be noted. And also just in terms of the relook in terms of the governance structure of the regulator, this is a new issue, Chair, as we said. These are the other issues that are not necessarily in the proposal. But there have been several discussions in terms of whether, if you look at the regulatory agencies, whether the structures that include a board, when actually the powers for enforcement rest with the head of the institution, whether there is a conflict on that. So the department has been doing some work. There is feedback which we'll share with the committee when we address the committee again in structural credit. We are able to put it through here. But also in our discussion with the National Treasury, in terms of the document that we prepared, which was approved by cabinet, there is a recommendation that says that for regulatory institutions, we need to relook maybe the extent to which a board structure is relevant in that space. If you look at all of our entities, for instance, you look at the Competition Commission, you look at the NCC, you've got the commissioner, and you've got people that are supporting that structure, and they would have themselves and audit committees and all of that, whether actually you need a number of layers, because sometimes it might impede the decision making. But those are the things that will I think just to close, therefore, we are saying that again, we do look at ourselves as a role model on trade regulation. We are very good in that, and Chair, I must say that we are proud that our regulator, in terms of its visibility, in terms of their visions in looking at lending practices, we are really proud they're doing very well, and we are seeing results of this legislation. And we also do think that we need to also allow them more powers to issue guidelines to guide the industry, because the guidelines also do assist in creating a relationship between the regulator and the entities that they regulate, because they will have also consult with them on these guidelines and they can work on them on an ongoing basis. But we also do think that there is a need for enhanced education and awareness. This was also picked up in the process, the research that we did in relation to the amnesty process, that a number of issues result because of the lack of understanding of just the basics of the credit that people are taking and also what the implications are. So I think there's a need for that, and in that regard, obviously, the NPR would require additional resources on an ongoing basis to enhance that area. But also, Chair, we also do think that as much as we are wanting to impose penalties on entities, but we think our main drive is really changing behavior. If we get the industry to change behavior, there isn't a need to be really taking each other to court and so forth. And that is the approach that our regulator is also taking, to do that in terms of protecting the consumer, but also to ensure that we really want to change behavior. Whatever intervention, whatever important strategy that we put in place, we'd like to just change the behavior of the entities. So these are all the things that we just wanted to bring to your attention, and we will be available for any clarification. And thank you very much, Honourable Members, for the opportunity.
And the director on the good presentation of the members. So it's up to now to the members to take a bite on this comment or any questions of clarity. All right, thank you. Honorable Lewis and Honorable Marshall and Honorable Lady.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Anders, and thanks for the presentation. And for what I think is going to be, I think, a piece of draft legislation that is really a step in the right direction for helping to solve the problem, critical problem of over indebtedness in South Africa. Almost all of the proposed amendments I'm really happy to see, especially the issues around the payment distribution authorities, the removal of adverse information after it's been repaid, those kind of things are really, and of course the clearance certificates. I think those are really positive things. I think those are great. But the concern that I do have is that if you ask almost anyone in the industry what the biggest problems are, what the biggest contributors are to consumers paying way too much, it is credit life. And it is emoluments attachment orders. And those are two things that are left out of this book. And I think those are two really big things where there is massive abuse of consumers taking place on a daily basis. And we're really, it's quite urgent that we take action on those two issues. Customers, consumers are getting completely ripped off by credit life, being, stuck onto every credit agreement that they ever enter into. And that is all this process. So that's the first thing. I really think that we should, if at all possible, try to deal with those things here. Secondly, the issue of, there's a lot of things that are dealt with under regulation by the NCR in the Principal Act. But, and obviously regulation is not under discussion in this process, but there are some significant problems that we are experiencing that perhaps if you come out of regulation into actual legislation. For example, the form of credit agreements, the way they are presented to currently under regulation, but we know that there was massive abuse in that practice, in the way in which real costs, the total cost, is often hidden from consumers in the fine print of complex documents that they don't understand. And there is, I believe, an urgent need to overhaul the way in which credit agreements are presented to consumers. I would motivate that we actually deal with that now, because that's a big problem. Likewise, the formula for the calculation of the maximum interest rate that's provided for in the Act, the NCR, the minister sets it by regulation, and that's administered and monitored by the NCR. The fact is, the current formula is wrong. There's no way around it. The current formula hurts poor consumers more than it does anyone else. And we have to look at revising it. And if we busy with the project, it would be best to do it now, and perhaps bring it out of regulation and into the bill. On the issue of the affordability tests, again, I agree that's a great step forward, that we empower the NCR to standardise affordability tests. Of course, we know that there are a lot of companies that do the most basic standard affordability tests and then rely on the fact that consumers haven't given them full information when it comes to the tribunal, to court. Then lastly, on the removal of adverse information, I just want to ask, does that include, you said here, I just want to get the wording for you. You said an adverse classification enforcement action. I don't quite know the wording from the original Act. Does that include a default judgment? Is that what that means? Is that a default judgment? That's just a fancy word for default judgment. Because I would argue very strongly that we need to include when a default judgment has been paid up, when the credit agreement underlying a default judgment has been paid up, that judgment should be removed as well, without the person having to go to court to remove it. So I just want clarity on whether that is what that means. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the chair, and thanks for the presentation made. I think that this bill goes a long way towards improving relations between consumers and those that consumes. I agree with Member A. Lewis that the way the credit agreements are presented to consumers, I don't know whether it's referring to the same thing I'm thinking of. The small print, the long document, and where, unless you are a great lawyer, really, there's no way you will manage to read. It's intended that it must not legal sense. But when it goes to court, it assumes you have read those things. It doesn't matter whether you only went to school at a great age. So that, I think, needs to be taken care of seriously. Then I think another point is the false attempt. I don't know how, whether they should be part of, how they can be addressed. False in various ways. I think white technology should be praised for making headway through mechanisms like cell phones, SMSs. But at the same time, much is going wrong in that area. I have an aunt who was just telling me, I phoned her and I said, why don't you reply to your cell phone? And she said, hey, I no longer use it. Because the cell phone provider says, I've agreed to pay a certain amount of sum in a certain contract. You know, she was so frustrated. So she said, maybe I just put aside. and see what they will be charging me for. It will be better if I don't use it. But I think there are false ways that credit providers are using when they sell. I think it's a matter of how much do I sell, to how many people do I sell, especially through media. But I think another point that's critical importance is what the DDG has made as the point of enhanced education, communication, taking into consideration that different people in different localities have got different capacities. Rural areas, far flung rural areas, where media is a scarce resource. So I think NCR will have to have a way, a strategy of effective communication, because it is that which will empower the people. My last point is the fact that I think it's to be we must appreciate the fact that when people have paid what they owe, they should immediately be taken off the credit levels. But do they? Do the people have to take initiative, or should the credit bureau itself, because it's more empowered, it's more, shouldn't it on its own provide to this say, present X has paid up, and therefore we remove him or her. So that the onus is not necessarily on the consumer. Thanks, but a word of praise.
Thanks so much, Mr. Chairperson, and thanks to the DDG and the rest of the team for the wonderful work. And this is indeed an earth center of our society. We were free in 1994. There's something that says we're born free but always in chains. The point that I want to raise is that maybe we have to take it serious that it must not only be the role of the DTI alone in terms of dealing with this subject matter. Well, this is a matter which is societal in current. It requires a broad range of stakeholders or social partners to tackle this particular matter. Because it's dialectically linked with the socio-economic environment in which South Africa's population finds itself. For instance, we are the most unequal society, and people find a way of surviving. As we understand the role of the industry, and which has been helped for efficiency during the global economic crisis. But some of the realities that confront us that number of families don't have houses. Even children who are orphans have lost some properties that have been left by their families. The huge negative impact on marriages, people committing suicide. So that's a bucket in which the society is getting. It's not a simple matter of rent and sense. It has got huge social impact in our own society. So when we're dealing with the subject matter, we have to take into consideration all those broad range of issues, including the social economic realities that confront us as a society. Hence, I'm firm that going forward, we're going to need multi-social partners in terms of dealing with this subject matter. But few areas which I want to elaborate as well is that it seems as if there's a gap as to how do you regulate the matronesses? Well, there are people who are calling themselves Changisa and Changisa, or Fabian in a particular corner. Those people will always target the pensioners. In that when you come to the township, you can't regulate the identity documents of all people. Are with those scoppers, they say scoppers, I don't know, it's a real concept. And at times when we go to, when we have to bury somebody, it's always difficult for the IT someone. I think that has been a particular practice, and that practice is becoming a norm. Although we've got these pieces of legislation, this may be a toss to the issues of how to ensure that we, the awareness, the enforcement, and compliance. I think that's part one of the messengers. Because pensioners, they get their pension today, tomorrow they've got nothing. And nobody's regulating what kind of percentage in terms of their capacity. I think it's part one of the messengers, because pensioners are not only taking their responsibility of themselves, they take responsibility of siblings. Some of the orphans, I think that's the one of the next centers. The second one is the issue of eligibility in terms of entering into a credit agreement. Because you find that even students in universities, they are highly indebted. And we have to find a way, even if we put the police, but also must take some of those glaring realities into consideration, so that we are able to ensure that there's a much more bigger impact in terms of what we should do. What are the preventative measures? Because to us it's important. The culture of saving, I think, is by one area where we need multi stakeholders in terms of championing the cause of the culture of a saving nation. But that culture of a saving nation must be taken as a national campaign. But as we take it as a national campaign, we must take into consideration all other economic and social realities. The issue of the behavior and the marketing, I think, has been touched by my colleague, Comrade Mabash, next to me. One can do everything, even ourselves, although we are learned. But there is so much temptation to SMS, to the media. Even if you don't have money, if there's a bicycle in the TV, your child will cry for that bicycle, although you're not affording. So these are some of the serious and complex and social realities that face our own society. But we can say we can encourage marketing through television. But I think the issue of the currency orders, I think this is but one of the messenger. I just wondered as to what has been the outcome in terms of deliberation in the network. Because you find that the number of people in the value chain when it comes to currency orders, I'm raising this thing from the experience. At a particular stage, I've been a worker, leader, some. And you find that some of the workers, they would find themselves being banished or by magistrates or judges, which you don't see, collaborating with the pay office, without workers being taken into consideration. As a result, we find that in across all industries, we find that the majority of workers are also competing for people to be employed in terms of job creation. But the bulk of them have resigned so that they can get access to their pension fund with rollout. We can go and analyze what has happened in a number of sectors. People have not been dismissed. Some of them have not been retrenched. But because of high levels of indebtedness, they decided to opt for their pension fund withdrawals. I think that was glaring. I think in terms of the study, you want to have more of those particular areas, but also what kind of a joint program, in particular by the social partners in the network. I think that one must be intensified. Maybe this question was posed by Comrade Bigot at a particular stage. I don't understand the rationale of the bond house you keep 20 years, but the car, you finish the car within a short space of time. I don't know the science in the 20 years. And there's always an assumption that by the time you finish 20 years, you pay that house 5 to 10 times, I'm not sure, in terms of that. I think these are some of the issues which must be taken for granted. Because a house or a home is, and a center is one of the constitutional provisions. I think lastly, is an issue of which I think must be considered going forward, that we need to have much more forums. But those forums must include using even some tools like the community registration. Because they are much more effective. Churches, the church leaders are not only praying, but they are in that on this particular country. Thanks very much.
All right, I think that this issue of clarity is a very emotive issue. But I think that with this amendment, because it has to fix the causes of the whatever provided the need of the housing bond is here. Let's put it on the agenda. Honorable Louis, the issue of credit back, one like taking a person is having a high crisis, a criminal, and putting school in the art, but still doing the same thing, but the same life, this is to recover. That's an issue I think we must do it here. There's no other platform for this one. I think that let's mention those things in the deep so that we come into a better thing and protect our consumers. But you know that credit, it's also the oxygen of the economy. Then we put in that credit, but the evidence has not gone directly. I think those issues are valid. Let's test them. Honorable, so the call out. All right, I'll welcome on Honorable McIntosh. And then, of course.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Just on the issue of delisting what is called the removal of information. I want to understand, there must have been two or three, shall I call them credit bureaus, but called different names. How do you coordinate between the two? Or are we suggesting the establishment of one credit bureau where we can record every person involved in the deposit so that it becomes easier for them to then remove. That would be one option. The other option would be, of course, a method of ensuring that the coordination, so that when you are removed from one, you are removed from all. So the consumer does not have to go from this one to that one and to the next one. So that element needs to be added and perhaps retired. Yes, the regulation of information has raised that issue. But one of the issues that came up in the course of the discussion was the high interest rates. We went up to about something like 32%, which the Mashonis are charged. I don't know whether the banks also go up to that extent. It's an issue that we need to deal with. Cut down that high interest rate. That the cost of credit is simply going through the roof. And we need to deal with it in the end. That also includes the house versus car issue that the Comrade Wiley is raising. Some of the houses are less expensive than the car. But by the time you finish paying for it, it's 4 or 5 times more than the car. It doesn't make sense. And it's a rip-off. So we need to deal with that. If you would just clarify the payment distribution agencies and the debt counselor, the rate is because the debt counselors also collect money. And I
if I understood you well, you were saying that the payment distribution agencies will not do the same, but they're performing the task of consolidating. And the debt counselors, I would imagine, do the same. So if you could clarify then what is the difference between, I understand debt counseling, because you must counsel and then your debt consolidated and so on and so forth. What is different from the other, when it is different from the country? Links to their counselors, there have been complaints also raised by consumers where you approach a their counselor and in the course of your consultation and agreement, the issue arises that you must change your bank because we don't deal with Standard Bank, we deal with ASA, we don't deal with ASA, we deal with Capitec. So change your bank, and that becomes a bit of a discomfort to the consumer. If that could be
clarified as well. Thanks. All right, I can see that Honorable Lynn Lewis is agitated today. He wants to come back. And then I'll give my chance. Honorable Makoko, and then Honorable
Mr. Chairman, I read the business session. I'm sorry, I was at a Home Affairs meeting there, and Home Affairs is quite a controversial department at the moment, and I have to go back there. But I can't impose on the committee and ask a question when I haven't heard the presentation, but I am reading. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks,
Chair,
for supervising the hearing. I want to say that, you know, I mean, firstly, you can hear that all of us are really concerned about this issue. But of course it's also true to say that in the majority of cases, over-indebtedness is because of illegal operators handing out loans to people who really probably can't afford them, who are in debt in other places as well. But also those are guys who are charging 100, 200% interest rates, not 32%. But as far as I can tell, and this is just a question of clarity and suggestion, I think the maximum penalty for being an illegal credit provider is 12 months in prison. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean those illegal providers are ruining people's lives for much longer than 12 months. They're ruining their lives for decades, and then they're going to prison for 12 months, and they come out and they start another illegal provider. I would suggest, or I'd like to suggest, that if we're going to solve the crisis of over-indebtedness, we've got to seriously ramp up the punishment for illegally providing credit in South Africa to, you know, I would suggest something like 10 years or something like that. That's the first thing. Then the second thing, just back on credit life, you know, we heard the story of one major company in South Africa, who's a registered credit provider, who also owns the credit life company that they, with whom they provide credit life to their unsecured credit customers. Now, surely that is a conflict of interest that we can address in legislation like this. I mean, obviously, if you provide both the credit and the credit life, the incentive is to never give a claim from the credit life side of the business, because that's basically just banking the money machine. Cash for you. So it seems to me that we may be able to fix that as well.
Honorable University is more than 18 minutes. Without printing my name.
Sir President, I want the least payment distribution agent. The middleman between you and the person, you as a consumer and the person you are being banked. And quite honestly, you will not do that for free. You will also charge. Is it not really of burdening the already burdened consumer? I think maybe one should really look at it and say, to whose interest is this payment stabilization taken? In whose interest are they waiting? Except that they just paid in the whole bureaucracy of payment in
this question of the Aboma Shonisa, if we don't resolve it, who else should resolve it? And then I want to start from the premise that says we can't ban them. And why we cannot ban them is because by nature it's a black market business. So if we ban it, it will go more underground and cause us more harm. But I think we must seriously regulate it, legalize it, set limits. But do we have a capacity to police? I would argue that we must develop that capacity to police. And people must know that if they do it outside the law, it is illegal, and that the penalties will be very heavy. Because that's part of what has brought us to Maidan. And in many other places, it's a way of life these days. Thanks, Comrade.
Alright, I see that Marcus has his watch. Well, it's coming to the floor already.
Mr. Chairman, sorry, just to get clarity, I've got the policy review of the National Credit Act. Is that the one that was done by the University of Pretoria? And so I'm which document we're talking about. Yeah, this document.
Yes, sir, the one that was done in collaboration with the University of Pretoria. After which, of course, so we aligned with the GTI policies and we drafted it into the document that supports the GTI.
But thank you. No, it's just that it's mentioned in here, and I just wasn't sure if I'm not criticizing at all. I just want to know that when I read it, I know that we're talking about the same document, and obviously we are. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, the other point is, I want to agree with Honourable Mabasa. You know, it's easy to pass a law, and then it doesn't work. And it drives people underground. But we have the same problem always as lawmakers, because we deal with a society which is not perfect, and you will always find that there are people who will try to access funds, money, etc. And I mean, like this morning, I approved a 2,500 grand loan to my employee on the farm because he wants to have his teeth improved. Now, it's a private loan. If technically, if I'm going to charge you interest, it's illegal. I'm actually in contravention. But the point is, this happens all the time, and you find that people will approach you for money. And if you know, as I know, who the mashonisa, which has become part of the world, but for me it's a very bad term. Because shonisa means to oppress, although put down. It's become now a money lender, and often an unscrupulous money lender. But Mr. Chairman, you know that in the township in Freema, you know who the mashonisas are. It's probably a widow of a teacher who's got money, and people want money. They will go to her and say, "Mark Pelosi." And she will lend them money, and she'll lend them 500 grand, but they've got to pay back 700 grand. But the point is that everywhere around, those of us who are in touch with that world, and the people have this need. So I want to agree with my colleague, we must be very careful, because they're already, in a sense, underground. They're already, technically, they're charging interest, committing illegal or punishable effects, because they're not really in terms of the financial act, as I mean, with the poor banks and we have to talk about all the time. So I just think we must be sensitive to that. And there's also a sense in which people being able to access credit is a vitally important thing for running our economy. And what we're trying to do, and South Africa is recognized as a leader worldwide, avoid being, I think somebody used the term ripped off, I think, we don't want people to be exploited. But if the widow in the Fleder township can make a bit of profit for herself and she keeps careful records, good luck to her, in a sense. So that I do just say I think we must be very careful that we don't start something which we going to be unenforceable and which will actually drop everything even more underground, because it's technically now underground.
Thank you, honourable members. As you can see from the issues which are raised here, these issues are serious. Although I'm not a fan of the American system of government, I'm not a fan, but what is critical there is that the MPs are able to assess the justice. I think that this control committee, this issue which are raising here, let's ensure that they finalization is because they are real life issues. They are real life issues. So and then people are really representing our people. At least now the aggressive which is being lobbied left by the standard is out of the future now. It's us and the people. It's us and the people. So these important issues which are raising I still appeal to you. Go and focus on them and ensure that we make the amendments, the final legislation in the field. Because there's something, a certain personal insult, not even a personal in the domestic property. He was earning about 1,500 a month. Her son had to get it operating. She needed about 60,000. She went to the bank to borrow that money. The bank didn't tell her that it was mortgaging her house. It was mortgaging her house. And then instead of giving her 50,000, it gave him 100,000. She could not say that. She didn't need that 50,000. But she gave her 100,000. And then when she could not afford that, she's out of the street. She's out there. The house was auctioned. So this issue which are raised by Colonel Blouaïe is a thing. So the issue is the capacity of the regulator itself. I think that part of the thing must really ensure that it is more capacitated. We should collect intelligence if necessary. So that we should be able to react to those things. Because that has happened this year, not last year. This year is only this year. It was still on the news program. I don't understand how I thought that the regulator would have, that's why that needs some sort of intelligence. So that we can monitor the issues that are happening. But I would have expected the regulator to have responded on the spot around that thing. Is there, is how they can see that the consumers are being exploited. But what is also correct is what the other market says. The issue of credit is the processing of the economy. We cannot avoid it. We need it. But there must be some sort of responsibility in the market. So, all the things which are here today, this is the initial question. I think that we must put it, we can have a major cycle now. Across the portland, so that we deal with this issue, so that we identify the issues which we want to put in. Because that's the issue of the mortgages, the house and the car. It's unfair. Go to the federal, refuse. If you want 5 cents, they refuse to give that mortgage 5 cents. That's crazy. Whatever. But I think that's the ATMs that are still paying interest only. Nothing else was not even when they came to have it. So, all of you remember, this is our chance. Let's make our mark before we leave this parliament next day.
So, I really agree that this is our chance to sort out this issue, and I think we must do the best possible job we can. And that means we must rush through the process as well. We must take time to make sure that we deal with these issues. Now, I mean, the example that the chair just gave is a perfect example. I'll give you one other one that I think we need to consider. There was a lady who I met in my constituency who got a credit card from a bank, a major bank. I won't say its name, but its colours are the same as this bird. They gave an Orlando Pirates credit card. And when they gave that credit card, they told her it was a card for fans of Orlando Pirates, and that she could pay her groceries with that card. They never told her anything about the fact that once you pay your groceries, you have to pay for that the next month, and that you get charged interest on that credit card. They simply told her it was a card for fans.
that you know that you've not getting anything for nothing.
Alright, I think that it will take the department and the regulator to come and respond to some of these issues. But the issue of the charter, which Honorable Lewis raised, Honorable, I think that the department will be rising on the 8th of November. And this period has if yes, we can produce the parliament. So it gives us very clear samples. So it means that, really, I think that as a control committee, it is our present. One comes to parliament. Then I don't feel like we can rush it through because of the seriousness of the issues which are involved. If necessary, we can request a dispensation where we can even deal more with it in January, early January next year. That's what it is. Because this thing is too serious to rush through. To rush through because when is it going to be? After 5 years, people will be in the game. Not easy. What I'm about to do is in the chief.
Chair, thank you very much for the questions, honourable members. We will attempt to respond to the ones that we are able to respond to. And I think because the credit regulator is here, some of the things I think that relate to the enforcement of the current legislation. So they will talk to that and what are the things that they are doing to actually make sure that some of these practices are dealt with. I mean, primarily the issues about how, you know, these products are marketed to the consumers, that is an issue. And to the extent that maybe the provisions do not meet the regulator, the power of the regulator is what we need to be talking to. The extent to which the CDA, the Consumer Protection Act, deals with the issues of promotional material and messaging, also we need to see and find the synergy in terms of how we enforce that. But I think it is true, Chair, that some of these practices they do undermine the objectives of the Office Act. And the examples that you've given, it's clearly an example of where, like, for the nuclear settlement issues, but also disclosure of information. So it links up to the issue about, you know, what form does the credit agreement come to the consumer. So all of the things, and Chair, recall that when we deal with the Consumer Protection Act, those are some of the things that the stakeholders said, you know, it must be clear that if a company enters into the kind of contract with the consumer, that contract is going to be invalid. And I think when Anita was presenting about some of the changes that we are proposing, he added to a constitutional court decision that we think it does have a significant implication for that, because what they were saying is that if you are an unregulated for instance credit provider and you extend credit because you are not bound by all of those and you don't do all of those requirements, you extend credit to an over indebted consumer already, you know. So basically what you are saying is that you will forfeit that money, you know, if that is found that you were not even registered, therefore you didn't even follow the processes. But the implications is that now that can never be used as a, what can I say, yeah, it's a deterrent anymore, because it was really deterrent. The fact that you could actually lose that money was a deterrent. So if that is removed by the constitutional court judgment, then what other mechanism can we bring in place to disincentivize this type of regulatory practices? But Chair, I must say that also that as much as we talk about the machinists, we should not also forget that we are seeing trends where actually entities that are not necessarily your usual machinists are operating in a way like machinists. The kind of messages and adverts that you see from established entities, credit providers, to the low market consumers, you can clearly see that they are now operating as well like the machinists. And so that is also what the credit regulator is looking into in terms of just how they intervene in that space, because I think some of the things will be addressed by the enforcement. But a number of the issues that the members have raised are issues that perhaps this committee should actually look into, because you'll see that we also blame them as other issues that came up in the process. So to the extent that the committee would like to extend further into them, we'll also bring in some proposals at a later stage when we are now getting all the bills introduced. but we did want to get those issues so that the committee looked at them. So I want to just hand over to the credit regulator first to respond to the issues that, in my view, would be the regulator's domain, and then Andy and myself will then attempt to respond to some of the issues. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair, and also to honourable members, and thank you, DGG. The issue of credit life, it has been a concern, you know, for some time. We are aware that credit life, there are abuses in the market as far as credit life is concerned. What we are looking into is going back to that work is capping, you know, a credit life. In terms of the study that we collected years ago in unsecured credit, we were able to identify that, you know, credit life as a cost, as part of the total cost of credit constitutes about 11% of the total cost of credit. So credit providers are making huge, you know, huge amounts of money, you know, from credit life. And it's just unfortunate that and sad, you know, that this particular product is being but as I said, we've already started work on it, and we are looking to check into it. There's also been discussions with industry players. We know that there are other, you know, there are some banks that are supporting the checking of credit line. Now, in terms of the calculation of the maximum, you know, interest rate, we are looking to do a study in that, but that will allow, you know, companies to make some, you know, more comments on that. The payment distribution agents, these are companies, four of them now that were accredited by the National Credit Regulator to distribute money. So consumers, once consumers are under the 32, they are not allowed to pay any fees to their counselors. So their counselors are not allowed to receive money from consumers. We know, for instance, that there are a number of their counselors who get paid by consumers and run for their life and have consumer files. Now, these payment distribution agencies have been collecting money from consumers who are under the TPU and would distribute, you know, this money among credit providers. And we believe that formula is working because through the payment distribution agents, so far, you know, we made more than 10 billion that we redistributed to credit providers. And this money that would have otherwise have been, you know, written or by some credit providers. So we believe that, you know, that formula is working. Now, obviously part of the payments go towards the services that are provided by the payment distribution agents. But we believe that without the money and we have to allow some growth elements to accept money from consumers, we would be, you know, that would be risky. Now the question of machinists, we have conducted trading in most of the provinces in this country, and we had to obviously work very closely jointly with the police to do that and cover. And in the race that we conducted, where we went to potentially pay our points, or we visited an area where we found a number of small trade providers operating in our building, we were able to get some of those things provided by the because they were retaining consumers' ATM cards, ID cards, and pension cards. And we will continue to conduct those rates. I think the members should appreciate the fact that sometimes it's very difficult to regulate someone who, you know, who operates from the, you know, good of the car. Because, you know, how do you get to find that asset? Unless you go to those pension pay out points, because that's where they would be at the end of the money. I think for now, let me just ask the company secretary perhaps to respond to some of the questions that were asked by the members. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. Good afternoon to the members and the DGG. Thank you very much for this opportunity to respond to the issue that you have raised. I think I also agree that this bill is probably one of the most important bills that can change the face of our country in terms of lending, because credit is such an important part of our lives. NPR has already taken the necessary steps to deal with credit life insurance. We have a new entry code that we issue as part under conditions of installation of three providers. In relation to the code, which will be published in a month's time, we have now determined what we consider to be a reasonable cost of credit life insurance and how credit life insurance should be disclosed in the agreement. And I think you will see for us, as a result of this code, that, for example, it will say you have to disclose it as the portion of the premium, $1,000. So you will say, for example, the credit life premium will be $500 or $600,000. So the disclosure requirements will be catered for in the code. Our eventual intention is to make sure that this is to consult with the DGI so that eventually we also, the DGI also issue regulations having credit life insurance and also other types of credit insurance. So that's the ultimate intention of the SDR. The guarantee orders are also being addressed in regulations to the code. We will also be introducing a limit regarding how much can be made available to pay guarantee orders. Because we know many consumers have so many guarantee orders that when the deductions are made, they are left with nothing. So we are taking it upon ourselves through this code that we will be publishing in our to make sure to be we address these issues. And again, regarding the issue of us, we are also going to be requiring credit providers when they apply for an issue of us to conduct a financial assessment, more or less in the same way as after the financial assessment, so that the magistrate will be in a position to know how much the consumer can afford to pay for the currency orders. Now, I think one of the members of the unit has been requesting us to provide this connection with information as to how this formula should be legislation that arrived at. We did look at the research that was done by the DGI, and in that research, what we saw was before the introduction of the FDA, and obviously because of our major class, the public class, clearly disadvantaged communities were seen by the lenders and the making the legislative lenders, such as banks, as higher risk consumers. And they were paying a premium. The cost of credit for them was very high. And then the other section of the population of these test-and-time markets, they had access to credit at a lower cost. So that was what motivated the policy regarding the standardization of the cost of credit. And also making sure that you encourage lenders also to lend to people that need to have access to credit. Thank you.
My question, I would have allowed Anita to give some of the issues.
Thank you, Honourable Members of the Chair and the DG. Thank you for the response from the National Credit Regulator. On the issue of exorbitant prices, credit guidance for the same work that is done by the National Credit Regulator, we actually come up with the formula of the structure of reasonable credit insurance. The regulator is also
call that one, so I'm pretty glad to have this information in the food and school stats. Because we're currently small civil courts for all the times. So I just want to honor the members of the question of the dignity of the Cater. We also have the Consumer Trade Protection Act, which trade false marketing practices. And that we should perhaps look at the synergy as to how we should be eliminating the credit space. Moving on to the question put by the Honourable Waida. On the issue of marginal stats, our act currently prescribes, and I'm very happy that we are together with the trying to respond to what the Honourable Marketing Association said about, a neighbour loaning out 500 rands to a neighbour, and so that now be regulated under the act. It is for that reason that under the Act we have thresholds that prescribe that under a certain number of hundred credit agreements, people should actually be allowed to loan money to each other. But I must emphasize that any loan, whether it's from a neighbor or a master neighbor, the prescribed rate of interest or that prescribed in terms of estimate would be applied irrespective of that person not being recognized or registered or that loan not being recognized under the Act. No one is allowed to charge an interest rate that is above what is prescribed by the Act. But then perhaps what perhaps can look at is the issue of lowering the thresholds. The standard perhaps too high if the monetary threshold is too high, because the members would be in the future able to guide us in that area. Because maybe now no one really can be giving out loans to the humanitarian people, I don't know, which are around the numbers of people are. And perhaps those are some of the measures that have been taken to try and curb the issue of marginal. It is also, again, just to quote Honourable Waida, a societal problem because it is sometimes our people who do not want to be subjected to the proper affordability assessment measures. And they won't take the option of the marginal because then there are no assessments and so on. And they need that life. It becomes just a cycle of life, a very oppressive cycle of life. And perhaps some inputs can be made in that area as well. The other point also is the issue of eligibility for credit receiving students and so on. We hope that the affordability want to come up with very strict affordability measures of the assistant, so that anyone who can afford credit can get it, but anyone who cannot afford credit should not be able to access a credit. As the chairperson said, credit is an enabler. Actually, some people take loans just to go to a university or tertiary education and so on. So we need to look carefully as to what the person is looking for credit wants to do with the amount of credit. Another on the issue of the 20 years, really does make sense in certain areas, and short lending and so on. And why, the only challenge is that the banks do offer like interest rate for sectoral rates, but for the period of time, they are looking to like the chairperson, if you buy a car, it could be the same price, but you may find that the same price is the house, but you are required to pay for a longer period of time, and they are not allowed to do that. They are soon will send me as well. The information on the order to actually the coordination on the information, the proposed amnesty is supposed to be automatic because the previous one, I think the shortcomings were that people had to actually apply, people didn't know how to apply. And there were many classifications in the previous one, so people didn't know where they were. The one that is proposed now, and in fact in the Act and the current bill, we make provision that within 7 days of a consumer say paying up a debt, the credit provider is required by law to correct all the credit providers to correct such a record. So this should be automatic, and in terms of the law, it will provide in terms of that we call it automatic removal of adverse credit information, which should happen across all credit bureaus. I hope that that was the question in that answer. The PDA, but the councillors, I think the regulator has also responded to that, to the different roles, and we have, in fact, I must say that the
the public sector. But we have also assessed that cost. Of the PDF, but the value of the PDF in the entire system. And when we access the value of the PDFs when making excessive payments to credit providers, we kind of found that it actually brings value to the entire credit scheme act. That's what, because it's only just at the end of the day to have a consumer who agrees to pay, never pays, goes back to court, and doesn't receive the benefits of the national credit act. Because ultimately that's what happens if a consumer does not pay, does not get the benefit. But with the PDAs, the consumer is much more easily able to keep up the promises to pay the rearranged installments. The issue of our cultural management system and in particular bad attempt to perform sort of unethical conduct, which would be, I think, probably the simple under the act. We will continue to work with the DOJ on the disorders in the movement of personal orders to prohibit them in the credit sector under the act. I hope, Honorable Chair, that has to respond to some of the issues that have been made.
Thank you, Chair. I think my colleagues have capably addressed all the issues, but we just want to indicate that the issues that have been raised are very important. The issue of damage orders, we just think that it must be incorporated. The issue that actually came up even more strongly when we were doing the research and consulting stakeholders on the amnesty process. If you look at the major causes of why people are where they are, we find that some of these things are a result of some of these practices and also abuse of those practices, because the debt collection system in South Africa is being abused extensively. So what we find depends from people is where even where a guarantee order has been issued against the consumer, that the company even collects more than what the order is, and the consumer is going to now struggle to collect the money back from the company. You know, so you it's basically reversing the collection process. You know, the consumer now is going to be the one chasing the currency. But you've been deducting even six payments from right and left, even after you have taken up your own amount. So there's a whole lot of abuse there, and it is really imperative that the Credit Act address the elements that it can address, and the other elements will then be addressed by the legislation administered by the Department of Justice, but it is an important area. So the other thing about the machinists, again, it is important. We recall that when the CREA Act was put in place, it was also to try and really minimize the machinists, because the impact is high, because people end up being dependent on that they are in a cycle of debt. So yes, we can talk about, you know, how do you regulate them, but you can't regulate something that's dangerous to your business, something that is deadly. You know, I think that should also be considered in a different light from what Honorable McIntosh was talking about, that, you know, where you just lend a few people and with an interest that is reasonable and so forth, you know, that should not be a problem, because we are wanting to facilitate responsible credit lending. But we also need to deal with the reckless one, the abusive one, where you find that consumers just don't get out of debt, they are continuously within debt. So, Chair, that is also a challenge. But, Chair, there's also other practices that have been picked up, and we do think that some of the things as well maybe cannot be brought into the law, but the minister can be empowered to issue regulations as they happen. Because you recall that you can have everything in the law, but other things come up as you go along. The practices around, for instance, the sale of loan books from one credit provider to another. You know, there's an issue that came up with when we should discuss the regulator around to try that they have to be sold to another credit provider. Then, you know, people start, you know, it continues in contravention of the law. So some of those things, the disclosure element, is related to how is the credit agreement given to the consumer. If the consumer, you're already told that the credit provider can sell your debt at any time to somebody else without informing you. That is also something that is problematic. You know, so I think those are all the issues that in the process we can, because they may be looking like smaller issues, but they actually contribute to the private life of consumers at this point. So I want to also acknowledge that the issue of the formula, we have taken cognizance of that. We do think that the formula needs to be relooked. We do think that I think it's about time that it be relooked, and so we can look at that. The issue around the credit life insurance, it's not only that, but there are a number of other things that consumers are made to be signing up for, some club things, and the disclosure is not there. So it is important that we ensure that we enhance the disclosure requirements as well in the Credit Act to then align to the Consumer Protection Act. So these are all the responses that we think we can give at this point, and we do look forward to obviously engaging further with the committee.
All right. Thank you, DDG, and Oshin for the input you've made. But I realize it is up to the members of Parliament to deal with these issues, to convince this group. I know that the scheme affects all the people in the country, in particular those who are coming from but as I said, that really the bill has not yet been introduced into Parliament, but I think it will be coming in the few weeks to come, and then from there we'll roll out a proper plan for out, and then the local government will take it step by step. But what is critical here is the issue of the state law advisor, that the parliamentary law advisor. You can see, as we can remember, we've got the work cut out. There are a lot of things that are going to come out of this, but we know that you guys are very dedicated in place of government. You will be able to mesh these issues with the population. So, honourable members, this concludes the first session of our agenda for today's meeting, which is the initial briefing on the National Credit Amendment Deal. We are running out of time. What I'm going to ask you is that as was Mark will be setting up health systems for the next presentation, I'll appeal to the members to go and grab the team and come back again. It's not going to be a break, because already, but after we've gone to the break at 11, it's already after 11:35 now. So we're having that problem. If really this is you want to raise, on that market on and then which are so important, I'll give that a minute.
Thank you, sir. No, 1 minute time. I've just been reskilling through this policy review. The thing, Mr. Chairman, which I think I would just suggest, I'm not making a proposal, I just think it's something to consider. The only real hard fact we've got is on the page 2, where it says there about 19.69 million people who have active credit records in South Africa. That's as many voters as we've got, a bit more. So, which is a very important figure, but we don't actually know really the extent of the problem. Now, it's very difficult when your Marshall leases are operating in what used to be called in the old days the grey market financially, where you borrow loans and things. Now, I just would like to suggest that maybe we should try to get a marketing company, they're brilliant at this sort of thing, to actually do some research into how much or to what extent is this really a problem, if we could find out it to some extent.
Research would be useful, but actually we do know the extent of the problem. If we look at every single labour arrest that we have, every strike that we have, the workers are constantly saying that we can't afford to live anymore because all of our money is being taken by either garnishee orders or illegal collectors. And so, you know, we have a very good idea of the problem. On the comments that were made about enforcement, a good point about the selling of credit agreements. I've seen recently this company called Canvas that's doing a lot of advertising around the country. And what I'm certainly not a customer of theirs. I'm going to do that. It sounds wrong to me, but what they seem to be doing, what they're advertising, is that they're selling people's credit agreements. And most of those credit agreements are under Gonshi order already, so that it gives you a guaranteed income, the person who buys the credit agreement. Now, I mean, that sounds ethically very questionable to me. If it's not illegal, and it probably isn't, because they're doing advertising all over the place, it probably should be, and even if it isn't legal, it's very ethically questionable. Perhaps if you just have a minute, are you aware of this company? Have you looked at it, and what is your view on it?
Thank you. Of our authority where
I think it was good, doing a very good job on behalf of our country. That's why South Africa tends to not take it as serious, but I'm telling you, a lot of our compatriots are doing good job outside the country. That's why wherever we go, when you say you are South African, you're met with respect in arms. So I'll just give managing the chance to get on to a report.
I'm just going to raise the key issues that have emerged from that trade watchlist that they have been published. I've summarized some of the key points in the major areas were agricultural trade, trade policy, regional integration, trade relations dealing with youth and the EU, and the new generation issues. In terms of agriculture, the agricultural sector raised the issues in terms of their contribution to employment opportunities, GDP growth, as well as the fact that more or less 10% of all agricultural goods land up in intermediary products in other value chains. So, and in conjunction with this, they were also dealing with the fact that we're having smaller farms, production issues, and other pressures in terms of costing. Then the first issue, in terms of when they're busy competing with other agricultural goods, that related to other countries, South Africa receives very low support in terms of their farm needs. They quoted numbers in terms of about 3% of South African grocery seeds was exported, while 12% in China, 9% in the US, and 20% in the EU. Then they raised the concern of trade, there's usually a trade surplus in agricultural goods when they're exporting more than importing. But there's now recently a tendency towards trade deficit for 2020, of that thing was one of the first big differences of imports exceeding exports. And then they raised the concern that the agricultural sector is really highly liberalized at the multilateral level, but increasingly still having this trade-off between further concessions on agriculture in favor of the manufactured goods of negotiations. And then one of the concerns related to this is these concessions don't take into account your cost of packaging, which is more than 50% of your cost of agricultural exports, which then places what your profit is being reduced. Then although agricultural goods are liberalized in terms of tariffs, the sector is facing increasing in terms of protectionism. This relates to your sanitary and phytosanitary standards, which are often not scientifically based, as well as other forms of research. And then in South Africa, we've got quite a number of players in terms of domestic food control regulatory environment. This includes your Department of Agriculture, the DTI, and then other regulators. And each of these have their own set of regulations, which when one starts negotiating, one needs to bring that package together so that you also protect in our side of things in terms of ESG, etc. But our mechanisms are not tight enough at this stage. And then they call for a WTO compliance report, which is currently backing into that. And in terms of trade policy, organized labor, business, were largely supportive of the trade policy and strategic framework. However, they placed a concern in terms of the overemphasis on tariffs, tariff concessions, and the very strict focus on other trade policy tools. In terms of, there was a question of whether or not South Africa was considering what the impact was and the interplay of having existing trade agreements and how they affected the new agreements being negotiated on South African exports and whether or not that interplay was fully understood so that you'd know what the impact was if you gave a greater concession in the area on the industry itself. Then, in terms of new trade issues, they raised concerns in terms of climate-related trade measures, price standards, particularly retailers and then other global value chain to transnational companies, then unfair global value
longer stretch of facing competition. So, in terms of the implementation of the trade agreement, it was concerned that we signed this group, ratified this group of the trade in Africa, but there's no news in terms of whether it's been implemented, what the status is there of it. And then, in order for South Africa to benefit from shifting trade and global value chains, we would require technology transfer, skilled labor, and efficient and affordable services, which can tie into new generational issues which are to be later. In terms of regional integration, there was a need for South Africa to get non-tariff credit. So this would be the areas where the behind-the-border issues to lower cost of trade and keep ease of trade. So this would include issues such as your different actual loads on trucks going across the border and that type of thing, as well as issues of rules of origin, so that when you're dealing with inter-African trade and deeper regional integration, you would avoid trade detection from third parties coming in and then selling it as an African business for Africa. And then one of the concerns was that non-tariff barriers usually affect the SMEs and small-scale traders who are currently contributing at an estimate of 50-60% of regional trade volume. So you'd want to actually focus your one-stop shop type of customs that are border control in those areas to benefit those particular segments of the population mostly. Then in terms of inter-African trade, many of our agreements are existing, we have not been entirely enforcing our rules-based agreement. And in order to do this, we also need to establish our certain regional bodies, particularly in SACU. And this would need a political will to actually get that to the ground and actually enforce properly. Then in addition to this, when we are negotiating in terms of Africa, we need to be able to get our regional policy alignment much better aligned. There's usually a job list in SACU, so Africa is focused on industrial policy and trade policy, serving that, where many other African countries are focused on trade policy as a source of revenue. And this obviously makes it very difficult when you're negotiating third parties. And in terms of the US, as I was raised, highlighted that trade with the United States is very balanced, with a very small surplus of deficit between South Africa and the United States. And South Africa, this is one of the few markets where we actually experience increased exports for advanced manufacturing products. However, the threat, as is well known, is that Agoa is currently accompanied in 2016, and the possibility of it being terminated or South Africa not being included in an extension is something which the DDI is looking at. In terms of the EU, there is the statistic of the EU being also Africa being one of the largest EU markets in Africa, so in terms of receiving exports from the EU. However, our trade balance is largely negative. Exports to EU are concentrated in mining products and all vehicles and automotive components, but that part is mainly with Germany in terms of our automotive company that we invested here. And then the threats are mainly in terms of agriculture, where the EU are imposing the agricultural subsidies, and which threatens our access to the market, as well as education issues. In terms of the new generational issues, there was this interplay between investment services and competition. Where concerns in the investments were related to the termination of your financial investment treaty. In terms of organized business, they were concerned about how they were going to be protected when they do our projects, particularly in Africa, and therefore the status of which in Africa, which are considered high-risk countries, were under question. In terms of services, which is your core hub of making even the cost of doing business, lowering the cost of doing business, the services sector was generally
South Africa and Brazil, the large parties have already ratified the agreement. So now it's up to some of the smaller parties on both sides to actually take the agreement through their parliament. It was raised by business at the workshop that this was taken excessively long. It was signed in 2009 and we're now 2013, and to see the benefits it has to come online. So I'm not sure who the smaller parties, but we can provide in writing who the outstanding ratifications are.
Chip, what is your judgment of the effect of the poultry tariff increases on our trade relationship with Brazil and in the context of that Mercosur deal as well? Are we off their Christmas list now?
What is the meaning of the negative trade balance at Mercosur?
The first one goes to the first, and then the second one goes to the Southern Empire.
Sorry, it's probably a difficult question to answer, but at this point I think we all are WTO members. We're all operating within our rights and obligations as WTO members. And I think we do have strong political, economic and cultural relations with Brazil. So I think we understand that it's not personal, it's business. And so the South African state is operating on behalf of business. So I think just as Brazil is currently investigating some subsidies that South Africa provides, particularly in the public property industry, I think we recognize that it's not personal, it's business. And we can continue to do business together in the future.
Later, because we do need the Deputy Minister to come in and brief us about this issue of anti-party campaign. Because as you know that our performers are really suffering society because of their music, their music being pirated. Much older than African pirates. Yeah, but it's not from Orlando. That's where they're based in. They're in Orlando. So tomorrow meeting really is really good to say to Allah the minimum. So don't need to come back tomorrow. Thank you for being a wonderful team for the whole week. Thank you, Amanda.